For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Brian McLean on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, yeah, welcome back. The store is open, everybody. Open. We are open for business. You can rep TNT now on your body, on your sexy body. You can wear that today's News Talk gear. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Brian, otherwise known as Hesher. Today in this third hour, we'll be joined by Mr. Bob Ziedman, and we'll be talking about his latest novel, which is a political satire called Animal Lab. That I like the sound of. Let's take a couple headlines first, though. Bob's waiting in the wings here. Okay, Queen Elizabeth II, cause of death revealed. Oh, everybody, drum roll, board up, drum roll. Okay, never mind. The Queen died at the age of 96 at 3:10 p.m. local time, September 8th, 2022, in her home at Balmoral Castle after serving the British Isles and Commonwealth for more than 70 years. Are you ready, folks? Are you ready? Official records released Thursday, that's now, that's today, by the National Records of Scotland, show that the Queen died of old age. Old age. Wow. Awesome. Awesome. Well done. Well done. Good job. Good job, Queen. Good job, Queen Elizabeth. Died of old age. That's a great end to a long, long, long story there. Well, one for the history books. Question, though, for a friend. Is old age really a death code? I'm not really sure. Maybe it is. All right. What else do we got? Iowa man found guilty on all charges related to January 6th Capitol breach. Ooh, we'll have to look into that one a little bit more. What else? Top vaccine expert with FDA and NIH warns healthy young people not to get the COVID-19 booster. There's not clear evidence of benefit versus risk. Wait, what? I thought they were safe, necessary, and effective. What happened? Boy, that narrative shifts quickly, doesn't it? What else? University of Utah student arrested for making a joke about a nuclear reactor. All right. Well, there you go. A little tromp through clown world for you there in the mass media cartel. Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Well, if you do, please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Gitter? Do that thing and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Our final guest today is the creator of the field of software forensics, and he's the founder of several successful high-tech Silicon Valley firms, including Ziedman Consulting and Software Analysis and Forensic Engineering. His latest venture is Good Beat Poker, a new way to play and watch poker online. He's the author of textbooks and engineering and intellectual property, as well as screenplays and novels. Wow, this is a busy man. His latest novel is the political satire Animal Lab, which is a modern sequel to George Orwell's classic Animal Farm. You can find some of his articles at the Epoch Times. His name is Bob Ziedman. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Brian. Good. Thanks for having me. And you asked me how I'm doing. I'm a little bit nervous because I think I am also suffering from old age. And now you've got me concerned.
Yeah, it's a growing cause of death, Bob.
Yes.
Not only do we have to worry about sudden adult death syndrome, sad, we have to worry about just old age, you know. And according to some of these eugenicist types up in Canada and other places, well, you can just walk into a suicide chamber whenever you want. So you can maybe even have your doctor convince you that you're suffering terribly from old age as soon as you retire at 65 or whatever, and they'll walk you right into the suicide pod. And in this nasty technocracy we're building here with fake green stuff, you can even put your corpse into a spore bag of some sort, or create a fairy ring out of it, or be emplaced in a tree, or shot into space if you can afford it. Isn't that wonderful?
It's a little creepy, but you know, I have toyed with the idea over the years. I mean, it's just crossed my mind that would it be worth it to have my body frozen or my DNA sampled or my brain mapped so that maybe 100 or 200 years in the future, they could recreate me.
Oh, okay. This is really, I'm glad you brought this up. You know, this is interesting here. because I love science fiction. I like to watch all this stuff, and I like to try to find where the predictive programming is in all of it. And right now, if you dive into Netflix sci-fi, you'll find shows like Altered Carbon, which is based on a novel, or Upload on one of the streaming services, Devs, or Westworld. There's all, you know, countless novels out there, all these things that talk about that topic. They base the scripts around that topic of being able to upload your personality, you know, freeze yourself, travel through time. I just watched one on a streaming service called Foundation, and it was, you know, it was sort of Battlestar Galactica meets, I don't know, Dune or something like that. But they would, you know, they would do interstellar travel by going into cryopods, basically, where you're, you know, you don't age, so you can, you know, fly 136 years across the galaxy and wake up and still be, you know, 26 or whatever you went to sleep as. But a lot of people in our intellectual circles, if you will, are very cautious about transhumanism as a whole, and this, you know, they look at it sort of as an apotheosis of some sort to actually have desires to do that, to do what you just said. But there is a sort of a draw to it also. Even folks that hate it for, you know, whatever reasons, they got to understand that this is something that people are going to do eventually if they can. And you just, you know, mentioned that you might be interested in that. So I find that curious. Talk to me a little bit more about what you think of this, this sort of science fiction aspect, but really it's not. They're working on this. That's why they present it to us.
Yeah, boy, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. I'll just say briefly. So first of all, if you like that stuff, you might like my novel. Second of all, I'll just give a brief, if you don't mind, because we have some time, I'll give a very brief opinion on every story. So I'll make some friends and enemies on the show.
Okay, great.
Westworld, I think I saw season one of Westworld. Of course, I love the original movie with Yul Brynner. The series is so well done, but by the end, it was so morally disappointing, I think, in that I think it's not giving away anything at this point because the first season was a while ago, but it's basically everybody's evil except some of the robots are good guys. And I really hate that. Same thing with the remake of Planet of the Apes. You're supposed to cheer for the apes against humanity. And I still have faith in humanity. We're going in the wrong direction, but I want to cheer for humanity. Let's see, there was Altered Carbon, which I started watching, and I thought the special effects were fantastic. The drama was great, but like by the end of I think I saw the first season or the first few episodes, and I thought it's kind of like, I don't want to make any crude comments here, but it's kind of like being teased, and then never getting to the end of the tease. It's like the whole time thinking, okay, something great is going to happen. This is really cool. And by the end, I said, I still don't understand what's happening. After several episodes, I said, I have no clue what's going on. And I just lose interest.
Oh, me too. I pushed through it and it was hard. I felt that same thing around the center version of, or the center point of season one. And I watched the rest of it, and I can tell you, you're onto something there, because all it does is just paint this dark ass picture of the future and of humanity. And you're right. You know, I'm seeing this as a sort of new trend in storytelling where they've just completely foregone that Joseph Campbell hero journey, or even the aesthetic of having a protagonist and an antagonist. Now it's like the main characters are often the worst people in the movie, and they're still kind of sent to us as this is your protagonist. They're a murderer and a rapist.
I wrote an article about that, actually, about what's wrong with Hollywood. And one of the things I mentioned was we're supposed to root for the bad guy. And I'm just really troubled by that. You know, whether it's, I couldn't get into Breaking Bad. I did get into Better Call Saul. Better Call Saul, by the way, was an anti-hero who I wanted. I think this is the purpose. You want him to do the right thing, but he never does. But you want him to do the right thing. He's on the verge of doing it. And then he just abandons that for selfish purposes.
Right.
But, you know, I don't
You're right.
Rooting for the anti-hero. you know, when it was unique, when you'd see one movie or one show out of 100 that did that, you'd say, okay, I've never seen this before. But now it's like every show is like that.
Right. Right. And they pile on the degeneracy too. It's like, they just make it worse and worse and worse. Like, you can watch, I don't know, almost any Netflix drama show, like a current drama show of any sort, and it will be chock full of people taking Xanax, people drinking throughout the whole show, and just having these really nihilistic attitudes, you know, that you didn't used to see. And some of these actors and actresses are people that are, you know, a boomer generation people, you know, like you look at, what's her name? Lily Tomlin and the lady she does that show with on Netflix. I mean, haha, funny, you know, diverse cast. Touching all the buttons there, but look what they're doing. Like, while they're in the story, they're drinking martinis first thing in the morning, just martini after martini, flippant attitude about anything traditional, sex, family, whatever, like that is all just, you know, completely crapped upon. And then just pill popping. It's like, do people not know that these are product placement things? Like that bottle of vodka and those pills, you know, that they name by brand, that's product placement, and it's there for a reason. And so is the cultural jamming that they're doing, I say.
Yeah, that's what my article was about, that you get these people, you know, here's what drove it home for me. If you remember River Phoenix, star of Stand By Me, which it was one of my favorite movies, young kid and brother of Joaquin Phoenix, who's gone on to actually become a great actor, done some controversial things, but I love most of what he's been in. But River Phoenix did these public service announcements against doing drugs, and within a week he was dead of a drug overdose. And these Hollywood hypocrites, which is the title of my article, they go on these rants about, especially about gun ownership. People shouldn't own guns. And then you've got them, okay, I mean, we could argue about that, but also they support the Me Too movement, allegedly. And then they make all these films that glorify people who have wanton sex. They glorify rapists. You can find movies like American Beauty really bothered me. The main character is a rapist, a child rapist, and it got an Oscar. And these people say, oh, you know, this is horrible stuff, but then they promote it in their movies.
And he turns out to be under investigation and have charges against him years later. I mean, weirdness with that one. That guy, that's a sketchy character. Like, I'm afraid to even say what I think about that guy. I'm afraid someone might run me off the road, you know?
But, you know, on the other hand, I like stories that have flawed characters. I don't mind flawed characters, but they should be presented as flawed, not glorified. And they shouldn't be an extreme, I think. But if you want to see, I don't know if you've seen this, but if you like science fiction, and I think that the writers of the and producers of this show are conservatives, because they don't answer the question, are you conservatives? I think they're asked. But if you look at the values, Battlestar Galactica, have you seen the recent battle? Because there you've got flawed characters, and you've got real debates and discussions on issues like abortion and war and terrorism and religion, and each side makes its point. And every character could die at any moment making these horrible, you know, life or death decisions. I love it. And my wife, who's not a big science fiction fan, loves it too.
Mm-hmm. Same over here at my house, man. We both loved it. And I think you broke it down really well. They have flawed characters across the spectrum. They have a diverse cast, which was, I believe, not casted just for the sake of its diversity. Everyone is very talented. There are real debates, and the show is written in a way that there is nuance. And that's what nuance is, what they want to take away from us. They want everything to, the only place they want nuance, they want us to accept nuance, is in their so-called protagonists in these new paradigms, right? It's like, you can accept the nuance of the protagonist of this show, even though she's a wine mom, you know, she ran someone over and is lying about it, and it's a fun little jaunt, you know. She's a murderer. She's a hit and run murderer, but she's your, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's not like that, you know. In Battlestar, it's like, there are flawed characters that make sense in the context of the story. And I also love what they did with technology in there. They showed you the essence of an actual singularity and what that would could potentially mean. It shows you the essence of a centralized system that has a single point of failure and the value of a self-sustaining system, the Galactica itself. And then with the people, you know, versus the other rest of the fleet that got melted by the AIs because they were all networked and they were able to be taken out with, you know,
yeah, one network attack. Yeah, that was such a cool premise. Yeah.
It's so great.
Especially, you know, I understand you've got an IT background, so you and I can appreciate that. So, you know, at the risk of making a generalization, but I think this could be true, although I'll tell you one exception. I think conservatives have a better time dealing with these nuances in movies and novels because we see a nuanced world. Unfortunately, I think it works out bad. I think liberals see everything black and white. You know, we're the good guys, you're the bad guys. Although one exception I have to say is I think that Aaron Sorkin, who's obviously a liberal, I think he's one of the best writers in Hollywood history. And I love almost everything he does. You know, there was one show I didn't like, but when he did The West Wing, for example, Republicans were smart in The West Wing. And there weren't a whole lot of Republicans, but the ones they had were smart people and they would have debates. And I love that show because and the Democrats were reasonable people, which I think is rare to find these days.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's a good example. I'll counter you that one. On the other side of a break, I saw a show recently where I was just like, really, really, this is how you want to go there. All right. Red baseball hat and all. Okay. But we'll take a quick break right here, everybody. And we'll be back with Bob Zietman on TNT.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
The pound sinks to a record low against the dollar, and the UK economy is predicted to flatline next year as the PM talks about the mini budget on Friday. It wasn't a mini budget. It was a maxi budget. It was a monster budget. It was a gargantuan budget. It was the behemoth of all budgets. It has tanked us down the toilet. So please, spare me with the mini budget business. And there's reasons why this Kwasi Kwarteng character did what he did, apparently, allegedly. The word on the street is Liz Truss has a lot of banker friends who were shorting the pound last week. That means they were betting it would fall. And Kwasi donged us with the budget. And guess what? It's tanked to an all-time low. So if that story is true, then someone's made a lot of money off the back of Liz Truss's budget. Imagine that. A politician's friends making money off what the politician does. Who would have thought it?
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm joined by Bob Zietman. Did I pronounce it right that time, Bob?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, Zietman. Yeah, sorry about that. And before the break, we were having a great conversation about sci-fi and just sort of the differences that we're seeing in some of the plots and stuff like that. We talked a little bit about Battlestar Galactica, and I was wondering, have you seen this? There's a new one, and I think it has some of the same producers as Battlestar. It's called For All Mankind. It's streaming on one of the streaming services, maybe Apple.
I haven't, but I have to see it.
Okay, you got to check it out, and you'll have to come back and tell me what you think about it, because what it is it's an alternative version of 1969, where the Soviet Union beats the United States to the moon, and the space race continues on for decades in a completely alternative way. Like, they're rewriting history. They're doing all kind of crazy stuff with it. Like, I honestly am having a hard time making up my mind as to how comfortable or not I am with the plot on this series, because as it is, I feel like there's already a lot of chicanery in our space program, and we get lied to about a lot of stuff like that. But what this is doing is it's almost rewriting history. The way I just read it is how the summary is on IMDb. But if I was to summarize it, I would say it's a show where they're doing a fictional revisionist history, and they create a world where the space race kept going, you know, step by step, year by year, between the Soviets and Russia. Soviets were the first to the moon, a big drama based around it. And there's like equality, you know, so-called equality and equity are a display of the utopian version of what it would have been like in the 60s and 70s. If half of our fighter pilots were females and half of our astronauts were females of, you know, different backgrounds and sexual preferences, all that stuff is built into it. It's absolutely like a barrage of a history that did not happen.
Well, it sounds interesting. I made a note here to look for it. And I guess, you know, in a sense, that brings me to my novel, which is, you know, has some similar themes to that, I think, in that mine is an update of Animal Farm, and which I think is one of the best novels I ever wrote. So George Orwell was giving a warning about socialism in such an easy to read manner that anybody can read it. There's no excuse for not reading Animal Farm. And then I thought, well, maybe I can do that. I can update it. And boy, if I had a fraction of the influence that he did, that would be terrific. But I put, in my novel, animals wake up in a lab and they can communicate with each other, and the humans are gone, and they realize they need to form a government. And they heard about a farm in England where they created a socialist government and it didn't work out. So they're going to create a democratic republic. And the whole story is about how, with good intentions, which was the name of my previous novel, with good intentions, some of the politicians start deciding they want to make things equitable for the animals. You know, some are smaller, some are bigger, some have, you know, opposable thumbs, most don't. So they start, you know, trying to divide things up in an equitable way. And basically the democracy falls apart, because once you start making exceptions for some and not for others, because you're trying to balance it, you know, they run the risk of losing their democracy.
Wow, I love it. That's such a great, great concept. And it's a perfect way to go about it. It's really clever of you to go about it that way. And it's, you know, that good intentions, you know, you talk about the good intentions, and, you know, we're at a point right now where, you know, us sheeple out here in the animal lab, we need to figure out how to communicate with each other, because right now that seems to be something that is largely lost. We've been atomized and polarized over the last 6-8 years in a way that we've never seen before. We were already well on our way to it, but now it's just gone plaid, you know, it's gone light speed. So, you know, this is a perfect time for a novel like this, and they want to sell us all this stuff, you know, this science fiction technocratic dystopia where we're not allowed to be individuals and, you know, decide what we want to eat or own anything, all this stuff. They're selling it to everyone that's buying it with good intentions. You know, what you said right there really sticks out to me, because that's the whole thing behind Green New Deal. That's the whole thing behind COVID lockdowns, is all with good intent. I'll send printing $6 trillion. Oh, it's with our good intentions. But then it all gets, you know, embezzled and scandalized and sent into various financial black holes while the government's on to its next gag, which is trying to convince everybody that they need to take on this experimental jab. The following year, All things done with good intentions, according to the mass media cartel liars. So, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, who knows, man, maybe the people that are doing this right now that are the descendants of the people that thought of this, you know, people like George Orwell, he knew these people, you know, he knew what they were up to. You know, maybe they do think they're doing this with good intentions, and that we are like animals, and that we need to be like herds. They're culled and, you know, fed, feed instead of allowed to be, you know, free roaming people with a free market and the, you know, right to defend ourselves and chase life, liberty, and happiness and all that good stuff. You know, America stuff. We'll talk about America stuff with my guest when we get back from bottom of the hour here. I'm joined by Bob Zeidman, and he is the author of Animal Lab, and that's what we're talking about here. It's a modern sequel to George Orwell's classic Animal Farm. If you haven't read Animal Farm since you were a kid, or if you've never read it, now is a good time. You might want to pick that one up first. Make sure you do that. May as well grab 1984 while you're at it, too. All right, we're going to go to the bottom of the hour news. We'll be right back on TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The FDA is withholding autopsy results on people who died after getting COVID-19 vaccines. The Department of Homeland Security is pursuing 1,700 leads on alleged war criminals living in the U.S. Ian is expected to become a hurricane and make second landfall in South Carolina. An FBI whistleblower came forward and says the Bureau violated policies in the January 6th investigation.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio?
Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss?
Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Yeah. Yeah, we do want to hear from you. So hit us up. Check the form out there if you want to throw something in there. Or email me, BrianMcLean@TNTRadio.live. You can get me there also. Thank you to those of you that have emailed me. I do read your emails and I appreciate them. The pace is very rapid around here though, so I don't always get back to everybody, but I'll do my best. I'm gonna have an email catch-up day hopefully here. Just gotta get my podcast uploads caught up first. My goodness, so much to do, so much radio, but we got to keep it rolling, keep it going, keep it live, because there's too much going on. I've got Bob Zeidman with me here, author of Animal Lab, and we're talking about his new book, Animal Lab. So, yeah, this whole idea of good intentions and equitableness, these are sales PR pitches at this point. And like I was saying before the break there, like maybe they did start with good intentions, or they think they have good intentions, but these people aren't like us. They don't live in the world we live in, right? And they want to create one and just give it to us rather than let us create our own, which is the whole idea of a republic, right? A constitutional republic of individuals with inalienable rights.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think my novel, I hope it demonstrates this. By the way, my goal, and I hope I've reached my goal, was to create a novel that's fun. The first thing, it's got to be fun and exciting. The second thing is it's got to preach, or not, let's say not preach, but demonstrate an ideology. I think too many conservative, especially conservative fiction, conservative movies and documentaries, it just, you know, jams the ideology in your face. So the only people who read it are the people who already believe in it. I hope mine's interesting. I know that a number of liberal friends of mine have read it and enjoyed it. And some of them have said, you know, well, I don't agree with the message, but I got them to read it and they liked it. But I think, you know, in my novel, there's, you know, and I think this is the way it is in life. There are a few people who do these, you know, way out woke things to stay in power. It gets them power. It gets them money. You look at the leaders of a lot of these movements, they become fabulously wealthy by preaching this philosophy. But I think the majority of people go along with it out of good intentions. And I think the problem for us is that, you know, if you generally divide up into conservative and liberal, although it's kind of a gray, you know, division, but let's say conservatives, you know, conservative ideology says we're going to help the world, but it's going to take a while and it's going to be hard and people have to work at it. And I think liberals tend to say, or whatever you want to call them, progressives or, you know, leftists tend to say, here's something we can do to make things good right now. And that just doesn't make sense. You're not going to make things good right now. We give money to homeless people. You know, that doesn't help them. They don't need money. They need to be trained. Some of them need psychiatric care, things like that. In fact, if you look today, I just read an article that I used to live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I moved to Vegas, or as I like to say, I moved to America. In San Francisco, the homeless are suing the city. They're already being put up in hotels, fancy hotels, and being given all kinds of accommodations. And they're suing because they're not getting enough money. For being homeless, they're not getting enough money.
How do they get lawyers? How do they get cell phones to call lawyers? I'm so confused about how this all works, but only in San Francisco.
Yeah, there are lawyers who are willing to do it because it makes them feel good in the moment. And it's not a real solution. But a real solution takes time and effort and is difficult. And a fake solution like this is you file papers in court, you get a lot of publicity, your name gets recognized, you know, you become a hero, but you don't actually solve the problem.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to repeat this. I'm sorry for everybody that listens to this show every day, all 3 hours, but it's just on my mind a lot. And I've been thinking about it ever since Biden did his blood red rant and called everybody that voted for Trump, a MAGA terrorist and, you know, that really harsh rhetoric. I'm trying to get it through people's heads that he was not just talking to people that wore red hats that said Make America Great Again, or just people that were at Charlottesville media stitch up as that was, or just people that were at J6. And this week we learned that, yes, indeed, as I predicted, there were a number of Oath Keeper confidential informants there working for the feds. But that classic liberals, he's talking to so many more people than you think. It's not just those fringe crowds of people. He's talking to you, classic liberals, sitting home on your Twitter right now. He's talking to you, center leftists. He's talking to you, center right. He's definitely talking to all the conservatives. And he's painting that entire swath of political mindsets. He's even talking to what I'm dubbing as the DGAF political mind. Don't give a you-know-what political mind. He's talking about this enormous swath of people. Basically, if you're not a progressive leftist that wants to, as you said, fix all these issues right now with big government and money and totalitarian tactics, then guess what? All the libertarians are talking to you too. You're all those mega terrorists in these people's eyes. And that is probably the majority of us in this country. If you can kind of just take the extreme left and the progressives and say, okay, well, those are the ones that think MAGA terrorists are the biggest danger in this country right now. Well, guess what? You have to believe everything they believe, or you're in that same category. That's what I think they're that's what the subtext is there. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I think you make a good point. The example for me is that, so I work with some groups, one in particular that has people on the left, and they recognize this threat. But I have so many friends, and I hate to say it, but a number of ex-friends who I would call moderate left, but they've bought into this propaganda that, I mean, they've gone, it's like the frog in boiling water. You know, if you heat up the water a little bit, the frog doesn't know it's boiling until it's dead. And people I know who are moderate left, that, and we used to have interesting discussions and disagreements, now hate Republicans of any kind. And they blame Republicans for all the problems in the world. And, you know, I had a hard time living in California because most of the people are left, but even my moderate left friends were difficult to deal with because they saw me. They saw people that I hung out with and people that I respected as evil. And they made it very clear to me. Whereas, you know, when we moved to Las Vegas, it was nice. I can have a discussion with people, and a lot of people are conservatives, but the people who aren't conservatives, they don't attack me. You know, we can have a reasonable debate about issues. And by the way, in Nevada, everyone is a Second Amendment fan, which is kind of nice. You know, even the people on the left are fans of the Second Amendment. And it's, you know, back in California, I told the story about, I won't go into it because I don't have time. It's a funny story though sometime. about somebody who supported the Second Amendment who just didn't seem like they would support the Second Amendment. I mean, and they went kind of far with, you know, they were going to shoot anybody who came on their property. But the point was, my friends in California said, that's horrible. That's horrible. You know, somebody could get killed. And I said, no, it's great because I know my neighbors are out there to help protect me. Whereas in California, I was afraid. I mean, we got really afraid. If we ever got attacked, it would be justified. Well, you're rich or you're white or you're, you know, white collar or, you know, you're not ethnic enough or, you know, whatever it is. You know, it seems like killing was being justified in some of these movements. I got into disagreements with people who justified killing Christians, for example. I'm not a Christian, I'm a Jew, but, you know, how could you justify killing a Christian for being a Christian? I mean, it's more complicated than this, but I'm saying is like, how can you justify anybody's death or celebrate anybody's death? And yet my people on the left were doing that because if this person had values that you didn't like, they wished them death.
Yeah, it's I'm a California refugee also. I live in Texas. I've been here for 7 years. And in 2015, when they started talking about removing exemptions for medical products, for vaccines in schools, and we're talking about doing it in the workplace potentially, that combined with a number of other things was it. You know, that's it. I mean, it got so green there that I couldn't get a smog certificate on my car. My rifle that I'd owned since 1997 was made illegal overnight, and they tried to make me a de facto felon for that. And, you know, and it's like, I just can't, you know, I'm not going to let my state tell me that I can't have my car and I can't have, you know, this trusty old rifle, you know, this standard rifle that I've had all these years. You know, I can't do that. I'm not going to live in a place that mandates medical stuff, that is, you know, culture jamming everybody and dividing everybody. You know, I mean, a lot of people have experienced what you just talked about in the last 2 years, but those of us in California, we started experiencing that back in 2014, I would argue, somewhere in the Obama administration, probably. We started having that happen to the point where the other podcast that I've been running for many years called The Boiler Room, our subtitle is The Social Reject Club, because we talk about things like this and then we're socially rejected again and again and again. And it was a kind of a small club back in 2015, 16. But then all of a sudden it started changing and the polarization got, you know, light speed. And all of a sudden it's like you just said, you've got people saying, well, that assessment that you have about whatever the topic is evil. And I like to see people that have these evil intentions get hurt, you know. And then we saw the behavior from the political left, especially the college age, youth age political left on you know, the West Coast, all the way up and down the coast. It was just a mess. And there was violence happening and the media covered it up or said it's not a problem. And then, you know, January 6th happens and all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. Look at this. They opened the gates for these people and the people walked in calmly and this is an insurrection. While we just all watched Seattle turn into a burning, you know, takeover zone where there was no cops and no ambulances or anything like that. And we were told it was a summer of love is what they called it, while they burned down federal buildings and all this stuff. And none of those people have been prosecuted, while over 100 people are rotting in jail for just simply being on the lawn of the Capitol building on J6.
Yeah, I think that kind of hypocrisy is what's fueled the political divide in this country. It started during the Bush years when Democrats found they could criticize the war that they voted for. Look, whether you think it was right or wrong, they voted for it unanimously, almost unanimously. And then they started saying that they didn't vote for it, lying to the American public. But you can go back and see the videos of them supporting it. But they found it was politically expedient. And then during the Obama years, it got worse because Obama made Republicans, he stated that Republicans were the enemy. And he supported the Occupy movements, which really frightened me. That's when we got our first gun in California, because I thought, you know, the police in our area were good, but what if they couldn't get there in time? Would anybody else help us? I don't know. So we got a gun. We didn't tell anyone in California because it's, you know, it's a horrible thing to own a gun. When we get to Nevada, you know, the question is, how many guns do you own? Oh, you only own one? Is that all?
You just have one pistol? What do you mean?
Right. That's not going to be enough. Let me tell you where you can get some more.
So it is in Texas too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, I remember one time when I was on a work travel, I was going from California to Nevada. I think I was in the town of Fallon. Shout out to Fallon, Nevada. Not a whole lot there. A nice little community and a Naval Air Weapons Station there. It's about it as far as I can remember. But I recall going into one of the gun stores there, being from California, whenever I would travel to other states, you know, states that still had some freedom and didn't have those lists of guns you couldn't buy. Actually, it was more the opposite. In California, they have a list of guns you can buy, and it's getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So they don't even need a list of ones you can't buy. They just need the list of the, you know, 5 or 10 you can buy. But if you're Californian, at least when this happened to me, I was going to buy a Remington 870. I wanted me a shotgun. I wanted a pump action shotgun, nice, simple, inexpensive, you know, dirt simple. And I tell the dude at the counter, yeah, I'm ready. I want to get this, you know, la la. And he goes, all right, get your ID out. And I pulled my California ID out, and he just laughed in my face. And he said, we don't sell guns to people from California here. You guys' laws are too messed up, and we don't even know how to deal with that kind of liability. Sorry, but you're going to have to buy whatever you can buy in California. And a Remington 870, perfectly legal in California. You couldn't pick a more just staple, you know, 50-state legal gun. But that was my first, this is the gun culture is very different in other states, you know, wow, this is interesting. Yeah. And now here I live in Texas, where it's like, you know, every person almost in every vehicle is armed and ready to self-defend. We'll pick up right there on the other side of another station break here, though, Bob, and we'll be right back and we'll talk about your novel, Animal Lab, a little bit more. I'm joined by Bob Zeidman here on Today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
The great energy reset has arrived. Switzerland threatens to jail people who heat their homes too much in the winter. You heard that right.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
In Switzerland, people who heat their homes too high will face fines and potentially up to 3 years in prison if energy rationing measures are put into place. And given the woeful state of Europe's energy situation, given their pursuit of net zero, expect jail time. Under the proposed plans in Switzerland, the home of the World Economic Forum in Davos, gas-heated buildings would be capped at 66 degrees Fahrenheit and water heating to saunas of only 140 Fahrenheit. Saunas and swimming pools would also be forced by government diktat to remain cold. The same controls are happening in the United States on Americans' air conditioners. They're happening throughout Europe on air conditioning as well. How are you enjoying the great energy reset of 2022? This is our future, only if we allow it. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Get breaking news on your phone when it happens.
Download our app from the Google Play and App Store now. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Final segment here on today's Brian McLean Show. On today's News Talk, tntradio.live, that's where you find us. Get that app. It's available to you. Compliance. Compliance is what they want from us. And they want, it's such a simple thing that they want. It's almost more of a lexicon thing that they want your compliance with. They want you to comply with their contention that good intentions and things like equitable and sustainable and fairness mean what you think they mean. But they do not mean what you think they mean to these people that use these words. And they're trying to weaponize your friends, your family, your coworkers. They're trying to weaponize your culture against you if you understand what they mean what's actually underneath the bumper sticker of good intentions. If you walk up to that car and you get your pocket knife out of your pocket, you're all carrying pocket knives, right? Should be, unless you're going to go inside the Capitol, then you might go to jail for 6 years, but that's another story. And you scrape that bumper sticker off of that electronic vehicle that says sustainable. What's underneath it is a similar experience as Rowdy Roddy Piper had in They Live. You put the glasses on and it's like, oh, what's really under this is slavery. What's really under this is state-controlled everything. What's really under this is your ability to speak freely about the things that are important to you. It's that fundamental where we're at right now. Would you agree with that, or have I gone too far there, Bob?
So I don't know. I mean, I think that's the result. Again, I feel that there are some people at the top who are manipulating things for the sake of power, for sure, politicians and business leaders. But I think the vast majority of people that I know go for it because it sounds good and it's easy to do. Again, it's like giving money to people instead of, you know, it's giving a person a fish instead of teaching them to fish. Teaching someone to fish is hard. But giving them a fish is easy, and then you feel good. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia, working class neighborhood. We didn't have a whole lot. I worked hard, and I moved to Silicon Valley, where all the high-tech companies are. And I think what happens is you've got a lot of interesting things where people have made a lot of money there through hard work, but they feel guilty about it. Sometimes the money is huge. I mean, the people who found these companies, invest in these companies. And I think to assuage their guilt, to make them feel better, they just start latching on to these left-wing policies without much thought. It's like, if we can give money to this disempowered group, we'll feel better and we're doing something good. And it's really not doing something good. So I think there are people at the top who do this because it gives them power, especially in, you know, large companies and nonprofits. I mean, nonprofits too, these, you know, social action groups, they have a lot of power by doing this stuff and a lot of money. But the people who follow them, which is the vast majority, are the people who say, yeah, this is good. If I give money to this group, I'll feel better because I'm doing something. And I call them the Palo Alto elites. But, you know, it's like what happened in Martha's Vineyard. It's a perfect example. It's like, immigration is fine. Let all these people come in. Okay, so they, you know, we're not testing them for COVID. They're not wearing masks, even though the government's forcing us to get these injections, forcing us to wear these masks, forcing us to keep our kids out of school. But the illegals who come here, let them in, you know, give them money, give them whatever they want. It makes me feel good. But once they come to Martha's Vineyard, suddenly these people are in an uproar. This is an outrageous catastrophe that we can't allow to happen. And unfortunately, you've just got a lot of people, you know, influential in the country who have that mindset. Let it happen as long as it doesn't affect me.
Right. As long as it doesn't make me look bad. I want to remain virtuous. I want to feel like I'm contributing, like, I'm so worried about everybody in Venezuela, whose situation I know nothing about, you know, that I'm willing to support all these policies. To support Marxist socialist policies that are using weapons of mass migration. You know, it's not just supporting a policy, it's supporting people that want to do a more Marxist authoritarian style change to our political system. And they're using classic weapons of mass migration, which, folks, you can Google or DuckDuck or whatever appropriate freedom loving search engine you like. Look at that, look into the documents on that, and then compare that to what we've seen in Europe, in Scandinavia, and in the United States over the last, I don't know how many years. It's been a slow trickle into a full blast. We've got over 2 point some odd million people that have come into the country illegally over the southern border since Biden took office, and they're projecting 6 by 2024, and we know nothing about these people. We're seeing trucks coyote trucks with 50 dead bodies in them, fentanyl, enough fentanyl in this country to kill everybody at once if it were like, if that were possible. I mean, it's just insane. But I know you got to go pretty soon, so I'll give you the floor. Make sure everybody knows where to find you, where to find your books, and we'll have to do this again because I want to talk more about lots of stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'd love to talk more. So they can get my book at Amazon. Whatever you think of Amazon, they've done a great job from a technical and marketing point of view to allow independent authors to get their books out. So it's Animal Lab by me, Bob Zeidman. I also have Good Intentions, which your listeners would like. It's my previous novel, but it predicted the future. It was supposed to be an ironic, funny story about where we were going. And I took everything, I took equity and it wasn't called woke at that time, at least I didn't call it that. I took that to an extreme that I thought was so ridiculous that people would get a laugh out of it and maybe they'd be prepared. And wow, within a few years, we're actually doing the stuff in my book. Very frightening. And nobody thinks it's funny. I mean, nobody on the left, people on the right think, you know, people like us and even moderate left, some people are saying this is scary, but people on the left are saying, oh yeah, this is fine. But at the time, yeah, people read my book and say, oh, this is ridiculous. This is funny because it would never happen, but it did happen. So anyway, again, thanks for having me. And I'm glad to come back anytime.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. There you go. There he goes, everybody. Thank you, Bob. We will do it again. I very much appreciate your time and your work. Going to pick myself up a copy of Animal Lab for sure. I'll follow your articles over there at Epoch Times. Also, very, very much appreciate you coming today, man. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, Ryan.
All right. There he goes, everybody. Bob Zeidman. So you want to get yourself a copy of that one. It strikes me, you know, what he was talking about there, because that's sort of the path we took with the Boiler Room podcast, too, back starting in 2014 or 15, something like that. We were really focused on the culture jamming and sort of trying to read the tea leaves because we saw all this stuff coming and people just laughed at it for the longest time. It was like, you know, we were making a bit of a satire out of it in many ways. And even the things that seemed ridiculous to us are now manifest in our current cultural reality. And it's been really strange to see things that we were laughed at and rejected for saying back in 2014, 15, 16, 17 are now completely manifesting in front of us in the clown world, in the absolute clown world. So there you go, everybody. That was fun. That was fun. Again, Bob Zeidman, and you can get his book, Animal Lab. And if you missed any of the show today, it was great. We had Tristan Haggard in the second hour, and we really laid it down. Tristan really laid down the global health and diet situation for everybody. We were going to talk about food supply and supply chains and potential supply chain disruptions, but it's such a rich topic, just the general health and diet situation, this whole thing with eat the bugs, all of that stuff, the vegan push, GMOs, you know, we covered all that stuff. And that was a really, really good hour. And if you missed that first hour, well, that was pretty good too. That was Gregory Diehl. And Gregory Diehl wrote Sadistic, well, he was the producer. He facilitated the writing of a book called Sadistic Pleasures. And that was a series of interviews conducted by an Armenian journalist with prisoners of war who were captured and tortured by the Azeri army during the 2020 conflict there with Azerbaijan and Armenia. So that one also, you should probably check out. I need to check that one out. That sounds like a lot of sad stories in there, but some reality and some context that you're just not going to get from the mass media. I mean, isn't that interesting? We hear so little about the situation in Armenia. You know, one of the metal bands I like, System of a Down, those are American Armenians. They have certainly talked about this quite a bit and have stood up for, you know, the memories and the truth of what happened in those situations. So shout out to them. I'm gonna have to roll out some System of a Down later today. Get into that stuff today. Just put some music on after the show, kind of blow off some steam. And I'm gonna need everybody to stay tuned because Jesse Zurawell is up next, and you don't want to miss that show. It's one of many amazing shows over here at Today's News Talk. Again, big thank you to Today's News Talk. If you don't have that app, get out there and get it. I use it every day. So big shout outs to all the TNT hosts, Germ Warfare, Rick Mon, Jason Q Citizen, Mike Ryan, Joseph Arthur, Orve Morik, Timothy Shea, Omera and Bjornson, Michael Parker, what's up? Shannon Joy, you're awesome. Steve Malberg, what's going on? Patrick Henningsen, and like I said, up next, Jesse Zurawell on Today's News Talk. What day is this? Is this Thursday? I think it is. I got a boiler room tonight. So we're new boiler room tonight, and I'll be with you guys again tomorrow for the Friday show. We'll close out the week. We'll have a banger. We're going to talk election integrity. We're going to talk with Pat Jordan, and Odd Man Out's going to join us too. That's it. This is Brian McLean, Hesher, signing off. I'll see you tomorrow.